I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know. The Winter Olympics begin in 2 months in South Korea. Who will be there and who will not? That's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by Cindy Boren of The Washington Post and Jason Gay of The Wall Street Journal. Welcome back to both of you.
Hi, Bill.
Bill, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I'm going to go first because there was so much Olympics news this week. On Tuesday, the IOC barred the Russian Olympic team from competing at the Games. You may remember that the Russians had a systematic doping program. Russian athletes will be able to compete as individuals. They will wear a neutral uniform, whatever that means. And then on Wednesday, the American ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, said that whether the U.S. would send athletes to the Olympics in South Korea was an open question. What would it be like if neither Russia nor the U.S. sent athletes to the Olympics? Jason, what do you think?
Well, my question is simply, would NBC just show old episodes of Friends? This is effectively a television show. Is it not the Olympics in modern times? And without the participation of the United States and its chief rival, I don't know if they have much to sell. It really was a ridiculous, ridiculous week for the Olympics. And quite frankly, when I heard Ambassador Haley throw out the possibility of the United States maybe not attending these games, I kind of felt like I was sliding into a warm bath. Yes, I knew this was coming. This is a political football now. Forget about the fact that it's not Ambassador Haley's decision. It is the United States Olympic Committee, which accepts and takes the delegation there. But why not drag this out into some sort of drama for the next 2 months?
Right. Every single time the Olympics is held, it's, oh, the venues aren't ready. The city's a disaster, you know, and then the Olympics go off because, as Jason said, it's a TV show. The games go on. So I'm not really terribly concerned just yet about any of this.
Yeah, you're right. This is historically consistent with how things go with the Olympics. Cindy, what's on your mind this week?
Well, what's on my mind this week is the NFL and how over the last four weeks, we've seen a bunch of really brutal, ugly events happen in games. On Monday night, between the Bengals and the Steelers, there were a couple of hard hits. You had players getting into scrapes with one another. There was the injury to Ryan Shazier. No one watches football without the understanding and the acceptance that they're watching what can be a very brutal game. But at some point, we all decide, you know, how much can we take? And I think the Monday night game between the Steelers and the Bengals had a lot of people thinking, I really can't take any more of this. I agree with Mike Mitchell of the Steelers that no one really wants to see flag football, but this is really getting ugly, especially, for instance, the Gronkowski hit. You know, they have uneven discipline, uneven officiating on the field, and the only answer they seem to have for any of their problems seems to be give Roger Goodell more money and bring him on for another 4 or 5 years.
You know, we have to sort of drill down to the uncomfortable truth here and ask ourselves, to what degree is the violence, is the full contact part of the primal appeal of what makes the NFL the NFL? And, you know, when players bemoan, you know, penalties and the game becoming flag football and not being able to touch the quarterback, they're speaking to something that not just the players talk about, but some of the fan base as well. And as unbelievably awful it was to watch some of those moments, I was struck by, you know, on Thursday night, we just turned the page right away. You had Atlanta and New Orleans in a big game playing, and people just move on. And, you know, we've seen some ratings attrition for the NFL, but listen, any other sport would kill for the ratings of football. So it really is sort of this uncomfortable conversation that needs to happen about whether or whether or not these things that people find so repellent publicly are, in fact, part of what drives the interest.
I was interested to see this week two very different opinions. A lot of retired players have spoken up in favor of the NFL's new rules, which, whether or not they do protect players, I'm not sure, but they're supposedly designed to protect the players. And then several current players are saying, hey, leave us alone. We signed up to play football, as you say, not flag football. People want to see us hit and get hit, and that's what it's all about. Cindy, what do you think? Is this just more of the same, or are we really seeing something different over the last month or two?
I think we're seeing something a little different. And, you know, we'll see next year. I get email from fans all the time saying I'm never watching another NFL game. I'm not buying tickets next year. When it's time for fans to buy tickets, that's when we'll see if there are any ramifications or not. I think there could be a watershed moment here.
Okay, Jason, you are last this week, but certainly not least. Off you go.
I'm fine with being leased. We all know that the most highly compensated job in America is no longer stockbroker or heart surgeon or CEO. It's college football coach. We've seen the salaries. They're spectacular. Jimbo Fisher just left Florida State to go to Texas A&M. Have you seen the salary package? 10 years, $35 billion a year. I mean, it's just out of control. But I'm not here to talk about the head coaches, Bill and Cindy. I'm here to talk about the assistants. Let me give you some data points. And to here, I have to tip the cap to a guy named Steve Berkowitz at USA Today, who's kind of the czar of following coaching salaries in college sports. Just two assistant football coaches in 2012 were making more than $1 million. This year, there are 15. This is a spectacular rise. You know, it's to the point when your college football assistants are making more than your university presidents. I think it's time for a recalibration.
Cindy, are you ready to redo your resume and send it out to everybody looking for an assistant coach?
Yes, I have my whistle, and I'm ready. I'm sorry. I'm going to disagree just a little tiny bit here. I'm actually okay with the assistant coaches finally getting paid because, you know, these are the guys who really do the work. When you've got a head coach making $7, $8, $11 million a year, that's obscene, especially at a state school. I'm with that. I don't have a problem with some of the money filtering down to the assistant coaches.
I have to say, this is a market at work. It's not exactly a free market because a free market would assume that labor was getting paid. So, yeah, but it's a market. And as long as the boosters, the athletic directors, the university presidents, and the rest, in that order, by the way, believe that you can't get a good head coach for less than $8 million and a good assistant for less than $1.5 million, the market is going to continue to endure and prevail, as silly as the results might seem anywhere outside an economics classroom.
I guess, Bill, if I live long enough, I can experience an NPR commentator talking to a Wall Street Journal columnist about the free market. But this is not a free market. This is a constrained market.
Of course it is.
This is a constrained market where, as you mentioned, labor is shut off from it. And so excess revenue flows into the people who are taking a chunk of it.
Right, exactly. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Cindy Bourne of The Washington Post and Jason Gay, who reminded me that it's he who writes for The Wall Street Journal and not me. Thank you very much, Cindy.
Thanks, Bill.
And Jason, thanks very much.
Thanks kindly, Bill.